And welcome back to Cinema Vino.
Forsooth, who beefed?
Yes, indeed.
New intro music, the 12 string?
It is.
This is our second go.
Yeah, this is our
all these jokes were already done.
This is take two. And our jokes are like pizza. It's even better out of the fridge, like reheated. Go through a second
I like
time.
To eat my jokes cold.
Yeah, just a little bit stale. That's
we've now caught up all the bullshit. We'll be new now.
Yeah, now our humor's fresh. So we're going to look this week at another Oscar contender, The Tragedy of Macbeth by Joel Coen, starring Denzel Washington, Frances McDormand.
So Oscar contender, it came out for the public, I mean, on Apple on the 14th of January.
Yeah.
So did it make like the rounds in like the festivals
yes.
last year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It had a brief theatrical run.
It always bugs me how they do that.
Yeah. You know, sneaking under the radar.
Sneak it in. And then they come out in like January for public consumption.
Yeah. For Apple Plus.
Yeah.
And we are drinking the Thousand Stories Bourbon Barrel Zinfandel. It's a big, burly, I would call this a cold weather's in. It's something you drink and it warms you up.
If I had to describe this podcast in a line, it's big and burly.
Big and burly.
But what did we lube up with first? Was it a Jolgott blush?
We did the Jolgott Zen.
Zen.
Rosé. Okay.
Rosé.
Gotcha. Yeah. So nice, refreshing, easy drinking rosé. Mm-hmm. So good first bottle. That was our pre-party. But for the actual viewing, yeah, we're doing the Thousand Stories. It's a good, like, warm-you-up kind of a thing. This, to me, was a very wintry movie to watch. It felt cold.
It did feel cold. Well, it was in black and white.
Yeah. And it felt like it was always like you needed a coat, where like, watching it. It felt very, you know, chilly.
Very foggy, like, Scottish morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like you wanted to put on a shawl and kind of pull it close to you. You know, kind of like when Billy Corgan's singing Landslide. You know, it's like you just want, like, a big old poncho and just kind of...
You want to look out the window and just gaze.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very portentous.
Yeah, this one made me want to like smoke a cigarette in an alley, and I don't smoke.
Yeah.
The movie or the wine?
Oh, I'm talking about the movie. Well, the wine too, I guess.
Yeah, either or.
When Landslide brought you down.
Yeah, that's a delightful cover of that song.
That
yeah.
8 seconds?
Mm-hmm. So a little background on this film. This was directed by...
In case you've never heard of Macbeth.
Yes, I'm not going to do a whole lot of background on Macbeth. I'm going to assume that, you know, you probably had it covered in high school, somewhere thereabouts. So this is directed by Joel Coen, who is, for the first time ever, co-directing or directing without his co-director, his brother, Ethan Coen. So he's rolling solo. This Macbeth has obviously been filmed many times, going back to 1909. And most recently with Michael Fassbender and Marion Cotillard in the lead roles.
In 2016, was that one?
Yeah.
I believe. And I think it's right now streaming on HBO.
Yeah.
Max.
One of the most famous film productions of Macbeth was the Orson Welles version, which came out in the 40s. And like everything that Orson Welles directed after Citizen Kane, the studio interfered with it. He was given absolute control over Citizen Kane. Everything else they meddled with. He did Macbeth with its original Scottish accents in place. Everybody spoke with a thick Scottish accent. Studio intervened. They chopped down the movie. They replaced people's accents with their natural accents. They overdubbed it.
They said, "We hate Scots."
Yeah. They said, "Can't understand it."
Is that brogue?
It's like a
Scottish brogue. I don't even know how it's spelled or how it's.
We should not attempt
pronounced.
This.
I believe you hear it like a brogue, or you'll hear it like as a Scottish burr.
Yeah, it's not Baroque, which is a period of art.
That's a type of music.
Okay. Yeah. Moving on.
Yes.
We are sophisticated.
I am culture.
I am an artist. Let's talk about Macbeth.
And so Orson Welles adapted and directed and starred in that version of Macbeth. And, you know, I've seen the edited and redubbed version. I've never seen the original. People say that's one of the great versions of Macbeth, if you can find it out there. But unfortunately, it was like so many of his movies that got butchered after he made it. So his career after Citizen Kane is kind of a bittersweet thing. It's like he was so talented, but everything got hacked up.
Well, now's kind of a good time to talk about the Curse of Macbeth.
Yes.
Right? So yeah. there's a theatrical superstition around Macbeth that every production has some sort of...
Curse
in either, you know, danger or something goes wrong with production or something never goes right. It's because the subject matter entails a lot of like witchiness and supernatural
spells.
Yeah, there's some devilry about Macbeth, the play. So every production is a little bit cursed.
Yeah, and people go into it with that superstition in mind. Uh-huh. Supposedly, it's like you can't say Macbeth in a theater.
Yeah.
So it's referred to a lot of times as the Scottish play or Macbee.
Or the Scottish tragedy.
Yeah.
Tragedy.
And there are rules. It's kind of like in baseball, if you do something that's jinxed, it's like if you say Macbeth, there's certain things you have to do. Like different productions will have different rules. You have to go outside and walk around, throw salt over your shoulder, say a cuss word. It's like then...
It's like saying that someone's in the middle of throwing a no-hitter, you know?
Yeah, it's like you don't mess with it.
Don't do it.
Yeah, and so you can't say
Macbeth. Is that a sports thing?
No.
Is that some kind of Eastern thing?
Far from it, dude.
So, yeah, Macbeth is a heavily cursed, supposedly, production.
So it's interesting to talk about, you know, the history of how many times it's been done in movies.
Mm-hmm. And on the stage.
Yeah, and, it's been done a million times on stage.
Yeah, I've got a list here. Some of the people who played it in the last, like, you know, 50 years or so. It's like Ethan Hawke supposedly did a great version of Macbeth. Patrick Stewart.
And it was updated when, I think.
Right? Yeah.
Is that like early 2004 or some shit?
The stage version, I'm not sure when they did that one.
The Ethan Hawke?
Yeah, it looks like it's around 2000.
Sir Patrick Stewart.
Sir Ian McKellen did a great Macbeth with Judi Dench in the 70s.
Damn Judi Dench.
Supposedly that was the one.
Put some respect on these names.
And Alan Cumming, I'm not sure if he's
Sir Alan Cumming.
He probably should be.
Nightcrawler.
Exactly. Lord Kurt. Peter O'Toole also supposedly had one of that.
Damn Peter O'Toole.
I know he turned down the knighthood. He was supposedly one of the best. Of course, he was the best, like Shakespearean anything. But yeah, lots of people have played it. Many, many times. Let's see. So, and I had the plot written down here. I don't really want to go into too much detail about the plot because it's like, you know, I'm going to assume that you've encountered Macbeth.
Let's assume that people know the plot of Macbeth, but like at the same time, you know, it's not a super complex plot.
No, it's pretty simple. I mean, it's like there's a Scottish lord and he hears a prophecy that he's going to inherit the throne. His buddy Banquo is going to, his descendants will inherit the throne. And so Macbeth's lust for power gets activated. It's like absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so...
Not even power, the promise of power.
The potential.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I enjoyed it a lot. I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts about it.
You gave this a 4.5 stars.
Yeah. A rare rating for me.
Yeah. I saw that come up and I thought that was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to go first. It was beautifully shot. I mean, visually, this movie, every single, you could pause it at any moment. And I was like, that could be a background. Like that could make like a, you know, a beautiful background. It was just, it looked like Macbeth inside of like a Pottery Barn. Like it was so aesthetically pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'll get by, you know, on the awards. If it gets by on the awards, it'll be that, the aesthetics.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, the writing, it's been done, you know, a million times. And like, there's nothing new about the story itself or, you know, it's not like there's a screenplay. It's very Shakespearean. It's very like thick and you have to, you know, chew through a lot of that dialogue and knowing the plot going in, it's like kind of like an opera. You have to kind of know the plot so that you can follow it better because if you don't, it's you're trying to figure out what weird Shakespearean wordplay they're doing or like, what does this mean?
Yeah.
You know, and I think for that, this wasn't really like a 4.5 star for me just because it's like, it is Shakespeare and it's not a new story.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, something I've been exposed to before, but like, it was so beautiful and it was well acted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every, not just Denzel, but like every piece was just really well done.
Yeah.
You know, every actor, the guy who played Ross was tremendous. Mm-hmm. You know, the costumes were great. And just like the mise en scène of the whole thing was amazing.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting you say that, like there's no script. It's like there kind of is. I mean, there's that definitely like Joel Coen would have constructed like a shooting script about his own like vision of how he saw these scenes. But it's always been a long standing rule in the film community that you don't like, you can subtract from the Shakespearean text, but you cannot add to it.
Oh, you definitely can't add to it. Yeah.
Because there was an adaptation in, like, I want to say the early 30s or something, like where 1930s, where it was like the subtitle was like, you know, based on blah, 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 by William Shakespeare with dialogue added by Bert Tompkins. You know, it was like.
I'm sorry, Bert. It was, you cannot compete here.
It was something like that where it was like, you know, and it was like, it was a joke. People like saw that on the screen and started laughing. You know, so that became like the cautionary tale of like, you don't ever like tweak Shakespeare.
Well, and also I remember taking a Shakespeare class in college and being like, oh man, I didn't read, you know, all this. And I was going to get one of the movies to watch because I have to, like, it's great reading the play, but like if I can put an actor's face to the person I'm reading, I'm like, oh, okay, perfect. That's, yeah. And we didn't have the Kenneth Branagh Hamlet, and so I got like the Mel Gibson one, and I'm like, oh, they're skipping a bunch of dialogue. I was like, fuck mm-hmm. this movie.
No. And the Branagh goes through the whole, it's a 4-hour movie.
Yeah, I had seen the Kenneth Branagh one mm-hmm. before, but like I needed the refresher, and I couldn't find it. But yeah, that Mel Gibson one didn't hold up.
Yeah.
Didn't help.
And the Kenneth Branagh Hamlet was great. It was exhausting. So I saw that in the theater when I was mm-hmm. a kid. It was 4 hours and I think like 20 minutes or something. There was an intermission in the middle of it. 20. Yeah.
Blaze it.
And I remember getting up and was like, man, I'm...
Well, most Shakespearean plays are, you know, multiple acts.
Yeah. And it's like a 4-hour movie in the theater to me is almost like when you're getting off, like I imagine like the astronauts getting off of Apollo 11, where it's like your knees are kind of shaking. It's like, I've been sitting there for a while.
Your eyes are just kind of yeah. wide, like you've been staring at the sun for the last like 2 hours.
It's like, I'm not real steady on my feet here. You know, I've had a lot of Mountain Dew. This isn't good.
So I like this as well. Like, you know, the black and white was very interesting. And I was kind of thinking like, it's great and it's stylistically shot, but for some reason, at the beginning, I was wanting more, and then I realized as it went on, you know, you've got the blueprint for the play, how it goes. Like, you don't have to spend time worrying and fucking with that. And so you can go Kenneth Branagh and go way overboard with the mise-en-scene and all the pageantry and the
cinematic,
super crazy, decadent, like, costumes and the set dressing and all the pieces on. But the fact that this was just black and white doesn't, because you really, with Shakespeare, you have to pay attention to what's being said. You can't like drift off and be like, oh, I'll play on my phone or like, you know, see what
you when can't the next multitask
scene yeah. is. And for me, this is an absolute must to have like subtitles on.
Oh yeah.
I watch it.
Oh, 100%.
Because, yeah, absolutely. I'll see something and I'll read it. Cause in this at the end, Denzel's yelling and he's saying, if you didn't have subtitles, you'd think he was yelling for Satan and he's calling for Seton.
Yeah.
But, it's an absolute must for me.
That was definitely subtitles. A big help.
Yeah.
To help follow the
tape. I have to watch with subtitles anyway. I don't know if it's my hearing
oh, I do.
Or if it's just, you know, my laziness, but like so I've grown so accustomed to subtitles everywhere.
Well, yeah, I saw a meme the other day talking about Lord of the Rings and we're like, man, isn't it crazy back in like 2001 where they had like sound mixing where you could hear the soft parts and the loud parts and they had light where you could see what was happening in dark scenes. It's nuts.
Yeah.
Compared to films these days.
Those were the days.
Blow your ears out, and the sound mixing is leave something to be desired.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think about like Game of Thrones season 8 where it was like.
Versus Game of Thrones season 1, which was like bright and fantasy filled.
Yeah.
Let's not even.
Season 8 made me think I had something wrong with my eyes. It was like, I can't see.
You did have something wrong with your eyes. You were watching season 8 of Game of Thrones.
It's like my eyeballs hurt.
But having it in black and white and, you know, your senses aren't being inundated with all the flashy colors and stuff. You're just seeing the stylistic choices.
It boils it down to its essence.
A little bit.
That's what I loved
like,
about it.
Like watching like Sin City a little bit where mm-hmm. You can tell it's a lot of like set dressing and very subdued and they're not wanting to show crazy huge vistas and all this. And so it does feel, a little bit, you know, like watching a play with yes. just little bits coming in here and there. Denzel did great, but he was very subdued in his, and I really wanted near the end where he was going batshit crazy, other than when he was like, you know, swatting at the bird caught inside. I wanted him to go full Training Day and like King Kong ain't got shit on me. Like
my man. Crazy.
Frances McDormand was great. And then
she was tremendous.
I was even surprised at, like you said, the guy that played Ross, Alex Hassel. He played Vicious in the Cowboy Bebop live action.
Yep.
And the like the first two episodes, I did not like him. And,
In Cowboy Bebop.
And near the end, I was like, okay, I get it. And as soon as he popped up in this, I was like, I fucking love this dude.
Yeah.
These are the only two things I've seen him in.
Mm-hmm. Also, the lady who played the Omen, the Crow.
The witches.
She was tremendous. Oh, my gosh. She was so creepy. Too, yeah. Yeah, she played the old man, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she's an old school Shakespearean actress, so she's no stranger to playing. I mean, and roles of both genders. I mean, she can do it.
Mm-hmm. She nailed it. It was incredible.
Yeah. She definitely caught the spookiness of the witches and, like, you know, how they definitely
helped. Well, and props to costuming, like, how they had her arm like painted black and then she like threw the cloth over herself and then sort of faded back into the fog and then turned into the crows. Like, yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And so well done.
And it's weird because it's like, there were a lot of moments yet where I felt it was very theatrical. And I think there was a deliberate choice of like, this is because with like stuff like this and, you know, Julius Caesar and all these Hamlet, there's a temptation to make big, epic, cinematic, like you say, vistas. Sweeping. And it's like they want it to be immediate, like in your face, like rather than big battle scenes, mammoth, like widescreen shots. Like, no, we're going to get in close on.
It was very myopic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very. I mean, almost claustrophobic at times, how close it was to them during some of these dramatic scenes. And it's like, I thought it was a different choice. I liked the fact that it was a different choice. I mean, if you go and look at other versions of these kind of plays, it's like they are totally different and much more cinematic. Like you said, this was like Sin City. There was a theatrical element to Sin City, I thought, too, where it's like you're almost kind of watching a digital play.
Yes.
You know, it's like a digitally constructed set.
Well, I kept thinking, and I'm going to butcher the name here, but when they're talking about the wood coming to Dunsinane, it's like Briz something wood. I mean, they showed a little bit where they had the branches.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought at some point, I was like, oh, he's going to go out there and he's going to look over and he's going to see them approaching. I was like, oh. No, if they don't have the budget for that, they're not going to show the that or Macbeth seeing that.
I always think of the Monty Python like little cartoony bits,
yeah,
where they show like the little castle and the tree, and it's just like, meh.
Or it's like they're moving towards the castle, and it's like, oh, it's only a model.
Yeah. It's just a model.
Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed that aspect of like how it felt very, you're very close to the characters as they interacted with each other. You never really pull back for any big, you know, wide shots. I liked being up close. It really had the feel of watching a good play. But there are also a lot of moments where like they had those kind of cinematic flourishes where, you know, Denzel's like hearing the prophecy and the water and all that kind of stuff. And the water seeps back down into the cobblestones or whatever. It's like,
that was awesome.
Cool shots like that really make it feel also like a movie. You kind of get the best of both worlds.
I do want to know how much of that was digital and how much was practical.
Yeah.
Cause this felt like a very practical set,
mm-hmm.
but that's a very digital move.
It felt like, to me, very shoestring budget, that they didn't have to do much in some areas. They spent their money on actors and, you know, again, you didn't have to have all of the flash.
I felt like it was shot inside of a Pottery Barn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it was just very like modern architecture, but at the same time it felt like you were in like a claustrophobic castle.
And this is an A24 production, right?
Yeah.
Are those close to indie films or is that an indie?
Yeah. A24 is like the distribution.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
But
and they can have pretty good sized budgets. I mean, stuff uh-huh. like The Green Knight was A24.
Yeah.
And they can have that.
So it was The
Midsummer.
Witch. Yeah. You guys still haven't seen The Witch, have you?
No.
Mm-mm.
We got to fucking do it.
Yeah. We got to put that on our list. So, yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I didn't know what to make of it, but I enjoyed the fact that it kind of surprised me for what I was expecting it to be.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of Shakespeare, I expected it to be the traditional version of Macbeth. And it's
so kind of, I'll ask you the same thing that we talked about with No Way Home. If you rated it 9.5 stars, where's that other half star? Or sorry, 4.5 stars.
Yeah.
Where's the half star?
I don't know. I mean, to me, it's almost like a personal thing of Macbeth has never been one of my favorite Shakespeare plays. You know, it's like I love stuff like Hamlet and King Lear. And I mean, even like Much Ado About Nothing. I love Kenneth Branagh's film of that, which has Denzel Washington in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Also, Keanu Reeves is in that.
Yes.
Believe it or not.
I think it was right after Dracula that he was in that.
Yeah. and Kate Beckinsale. Yeah. Great cast.
And Emma Thompson.
Emma Thompson. But I that movie was so good it made me want to go back and read the play. Mm-hmm. And so I enjoyed that play a lot. Macbeth has never been one of my personal favorites. And so that's almost kind of a hang up on my part. It's like going into watching an adaptation of a book or something where it's like you didn't necessarily love the book. Mm-hmm. So that's the only thing holding me back. Not that I didn't dislike Macbeth, but it's like it's never been one of my top Shakespeare plays. So
that's kind of my thing. I think I would probably give this like a 3.5-4 stars. Just because like it's at the end of the day, it's not an original movie. I mean, it's Shakespeare. Like it's not lazy because Shakespeare is very difficult to do well, but it's like you could have made an original movie with original plot, with original screenwriting. Mm-hmm. Instead, you made Shakespeare,
yeah,
which is fine. You did it really, really well. But at the end of the day, it's like you're not making something new and you're not contributing new, you know, ideas, thoughts, something new to the stage that's been done before.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it and I thought it was a great adaptation. I think it deserves all the rewards for, you know, everything that they did.
Yeah. Yeah. It was well done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellently done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I'd give it like a 7 out of 10, which is, I guess, a
3.5.
3.5.
Yeah.
Stars. It's, it was one of the first plays I had ever read in school and, or Shakespeare plays anyway. And I enjoyed it. I don't think it was my favorite adaptation. I don't know if I have a favorite, but it was good. I just wanted more craziness because, you know, there's a certain thing about reading Shakespeare or listening to it for the first time. And sometimes people know that you absolutely have no clue what they're saying. And so they convey it more with their acting. And this was so subdued. Like Frances McDormand did great, but I and so did Denzel. I was waiting for the absolute craziness to happen. Like Denzel was a cool, cold motherfucker at the end of it.
He was.
Taking out that last dude, and then you know, when he was coming at McDuff, he was like, oh, so everything says you're probably going to kill me, but fuck it. Like, I'm not going to yield at all. Like, I'm going to take my one chance here.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he was very, he was like, all right, well, let's, you know.
Talk about claustrophobic. Like, that final fight scene where they were on the parapet where it was, like, maybe like a foot and a half wide. So good. So well done.
Yeah.
I will not let this podcast go by the wayside without commenting that Brendan Gleeson fucks. He played McDonald the king. And I was like, damn it. I think he dies early in this. I can't remember the play. And of course he does.
Yeah.
But McDonald, you know, he's Mad-Eye Moody in Harry Potter. He was in, you know, Braveheart back in the day. And
Dudley is the son.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's all
couple Harry Potter tie-ins.
Yeah. And there was another one in there. The actress who played the witches. She is the old lady, the neighbor who checks on Harry.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say she was Dobby, but, you know.
But, yeah, she checks on Harry or whatever. He doesn't realize that she's magic using.
She was a non-magic magic user.
Yeah.
Squib.
Yeah.
So in conclusion, Brendan Gleeson fucks.
Mm-hmm. He does fuck.
I want to see him in more things. Also,
he would be a great Macbeth too.
Yeah, we need to watch Lake Placid as well. R.I.P. Betty White.
Yeah,
he's in that, and he's a delight.
I want to talk about Joel Coen. Interesting that this is his first breakout. Is it his first breakout movie away from his brother?
Mm-hmm. It's the very first.
It did not feel like a Coen Brothers movie.
Not at all.
At all.
And that's why I kind of loved it because it's like, I love the Coen brothers because you go back, they have to have one of the weirdest filmographies where you can watch you know, Blood Simple and Big Lebowski and Hudsucker Proxy and Oh Brother and all these weird movies, Lady Killers. It's like a strange, movie.
I can't put words to it, but they have a vibe of movies that are like off-putting and enjoyable, but like in a dark way.
Yeah.
They just have like this knack for just putting movies together in a way that just is so entertaining.
And so, it's unique.
Very unique. Yeah.
So I enjoy that a lot.
Did they do Fargo?
They did.
Yeah.
Okay. They did the film. And yeah, Frances McDormand, mm-hmm. who I believe Joel and Frances are husband and wife.
Oh.
So okay. There you go.
Yeah. I thought one.
Pretty sure she was interesting. Married to Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
I thought one interesting choice, like and again, it was only because I've had the flashbacks of Sin City watching this, is I was kind of hoping that blood in this would actually be red.
Red,
yeah.
Yeah, I thought that would have been an interesting choice as well. Yeah. But yeah, I get why they didn't do it.
Yeah.
Just want to keep it nice and crisp.
Mm-hmm.
Crisp.
Mm-hmm.
I love black and white cinematography too. I'm a sucker for it.
It does. Yeah, it looks delightful.
It slaps.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of growing up in Manford. Like, they had one video store there, and you could rent five movies for $5 for 5 days. It was a heck of a deal on VHS. Deal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they would track down stuff for me if I asked them, like, weird stuff. And so I'd go through whole stretches.
We don't
like,
need to hear about the weird stuff that you had to track down, Todd.
You had to go through the beaded curtain.
Yeah, I had to have a fake ID. But, yeah, I mean, it would be like, you know, just random, you know, French movies and stuff. And I mean, like old black and white films. And I fell in love with black and white cinematography watching that. And so now I'm a sucker for it. I love to watch a good movie in black and white.
Yeah. I just feel better than other people when I'm watching a film in black and white. Absolutely. Because I'm like, the peasants can't watch this stuff. They're like, I can never watch a movie in black and white.
I think before this, the last black and white movie I watched was probably The Lighthouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was amazing cinematography for that too.
I still need to watch it.
And that's the thing. So black and white kind of not cheapens, but it makes it easier to do cool cinematography.
Yeah.
So like it adds a lot of depth to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not distracted as much by color, but black and white really adds a lot of just like really cool dimensions to whatever you're shooting. So it's not a cheat code to doing better, but it's like, you can do a lot more with it.
It puts a strange energy to the movie. It gives it a weird vibe.
It puts so much more emphasis on the lighting, and you appreciate the lighting so much more. And I think this movie does that really well with shadow, really cool spotlights, really cool, like him walking into that circle light.
Yes.
Walking out of the circle light.
Mm-hmm.
They played that up so well.
Yeah.
So well.
Yeah. I enjoyed all of that a lot. We are going to take a quick break, and then we're going to draw our schedule for February out of a hat, provided mostly by users on Instagram, but also we've thrown in a few in the pot. So we're going to get our February schedule. We're going to do rom-coms and good champagne to pair with it. So date movies and good date movie drinks. So we will be right back.
Because it's ladies night and you're not feeling right.
If you're interested in starting your very own podcast, Blueberry is one of the top hosting companies in the world. You can get your first month free with Blueberry by using the promo code CINEMAVINO. You can also use the hosting estimator on their site to determine the best plan for you. And don't forget, that's CINEMAVINO to get your first month free. And we are back, and we are going to draw
Verily.
We are verily back. We're going to draw four movies for the month of February. We're going to do date movies, champagne. So I'm going to let Sean Jordan draw the first one.
All right. Sean Joe?
I'm mixing these up just for the sake of clarity. And
these are from our Instagram comments?
It's a mixture of Instagram and our own.
These are listener submitted. This was While You Were Sleeping?
Mm-hmm. That was one of mine.
That was at Todd.
We'll move that toward the end.
Okay.
Oh. Did they give us permission to give out their handles on Instagram, or we should keep that under wraps?
Comments, they can...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're fine. We'll give them a little shout out. Okay. Travis is drawing the next one right now out of our cocktail ice bucket.
Yeah, I don't know what Todd gave me, but I think Matthew McConaughey would turn this upside down and use it as bongos. Oh, well, this is fucked up. It's one I put in. Honestly, I'm going to put that back in.
The impartiality of this podcast is becoming
pure as the driven snow.
Well, I told them we have to watch mine anyway, so that's fine. So I'll say it after the end. But this is As Good As It Gets, and it's from user at Megawatts.
That's my friend Meg.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Yeah. So shout out to her. It's As Good As It Gets. Kick off that one first.
Waffle. Mm-hmm. Europe.
Europe.
And my first pick will be a wild card at the end.
Okay. We have Long Shot. which is from our buddy Daniel Giblin at Racetrack Freddy. Longshot is Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron.
Charlize Theron?
Oh, Seth Rogen? Oh, I've seen that.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, it's a good one. I like that one. So yeah, we've got As Good As It Gets, Longshot.
And Daniel, who has also been a guest on here before. I forget which one we were doing. I think we were talking about Scorsese talking shit about Marvel films.
Yes.
But we need to get Daniel back on here.
Good people.
I'm saying that publicly.
So are we drawing a fourth or are we going with Travis's?
No, go ahead and draw a fourth and then I'll add in the wild card because I feel weird pulling out my own.
Right. That's what she said.
Meow.
Hey-o. This is Superbad, suggested by Todd Turner.
Joanna, yeah. Okay.
Wait, so we have two by...
We've got two by this household, yeah.
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 Which is fine. You
know? Well, fine. Three if mine goes through.
They provide most of the literature, so I'm not sure we might get
to. So the one that I put in, that I pulled, was The Proposal and with Ryan Reynolds and Sandra Bullock. But honestly, I wanted to watch it for Betty White because I had never seen it before.
Yeah.
Until recently, so... Betty, this one's for you, RIP.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we can definitely do one for that one as well.
And also this month, we will be watching The Legend of Vox Machina, animated show on Amazon Prime that comes out January 28th.
I saw the trailer for that. Looks pretty good.
Yeah, it doesn't look bad. It's based on a live streaming Dungeons & Dragons show called Critical Role, and I'm a super big nerd for it, and I gives me big old boners, and I want to share these boners with you guys.
Okay.
We want you to share your boners with us.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we should pull another one because we've had several that were just from us.
Do you want to just regen pull?
Yeah. I don't know how
we can audible it.
Yeah. We've got five films with the wild card, but it's for the whole month of February, and that's a long month anyway.
You're so cute.
This is City of Angels, suggested by Sweet Susie Stardust.
Okay.
Ooh.
City of Angels. Okay, so we could do that one.
Is that with Nicolas Cage and Meg Ryan?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I saw that one on rental. I rented that when it came out. I haven't seen it since then.
Like so I'm
yeah, very curious to go back.
Hang on to these other ones, and we'll just see if we, you know, get through some of these. I now that COVID has passed through a lot of our ranks, we've had to push back some podcasts, but yeah, I'm ready to hop back in this piece.
Mm-hmm. So we could do,
and we'll keep doing Boba Fett, I guess.
Boba Fett.
We should have done Peacemaker too, because man, it's Peacemaker is.
We should definitely podcast on it once it finishes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I like
episode
that.
Episode by episode.
Okay. So how about this for a lineup? Okay, we could do As Good As It Gets,
yep.
Long Shots, City of Angels, and Superbad. That could be our February lineup. And then do a side pod proposal with Betty White.
Yeah, we have to do a Betty White film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that could be our schedule.
I love it.
Honestly, yeah. We should do this whole podcast for Betty.
I do love Betty White. And going back and watching The Golden Girls, because my wife and I, long before, have watched on Hulu all the entire series front to back. Mm-hmm. And even going back, I was like,
finish?
Yeah.
Soup to nuts?
Did all seven seasons. And it was like, and I've seen them all before, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And I was like, these four actresses have the best comic timing, maybe on any TV show ever.
Oh, yeah.
This is like the fucking all-star team. The whole four of them, they're amazing.
But we also, I know we're not going to watch it this month, but I also have to tell our listeners, if you have not watched it before, to watch Lake Placid. About a giant fucking crocodile.
Is that Jennifer Lopez?
Nope. That's, you're thinking of Anaconda.
Okay, yeah.
This was Bridget Fonda, Bill Pullman. But R.I.P. Yeah, it's got Betty White talking dirty. It's also got fucking Brendan Gleeson. It's got Oliver Platt. It's just heavenly.
Yeah. So yeah, we got our schedule coming up, so... this has been another episode of Cinema Vino. Sean Jordan, Travis Budd.
Yo-hoy.
Exactly.
Hopefully we'll have Tay back next round.
Yeah, hopefully he will be here to join us. We will talk about our date movies. We're going to drink some delicious champagne. We're going to do a whole champagne month.
Can we get an omelet bar for our next?
We're going to do like
mimosas.
We're going to do crepes.
Ooh.
We're going to do champagne and crepes.
I like a crepe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm creping and I'm creping and I'm creping.
Just say you like really flat pancakes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, for your show, I would hope that we were doing waffles.
We shall see. But next we're going to do a little mini pod on the Book of Boba Fett, episode 4.
Boba Fett.
Tune into that. That should be real exciting. So we will see you guys real soon. Not with a bang, but with a whimper.
As always.
Be sure to listen, rate, and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Our website is at cinemavino.net, and reviews of these movies can be found at ToddWoffordMovies.com.